And we are live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I am your host, Mike Lafferty. And as you can see from my poor quality video, the sun itself is right here next to me. And we have a very special guest today. That's Rush Hayes of the popular and professionally produced Keystroke Medium Podcast. How you doing, Josh?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Professionally produced, though, it's kind of a stretch. I think we just are lucky.
It's a beautiful microphone you have there, sir.
Thank you. Hopefully it lasts the whole show. On Monday's show last week, it killed, like it died like halfway through the show. I have no idea why. I spent 15 minutes trying to fix it while we were live, and then eventually I had to go to my backup mic on my headset. So hopefully it'll keep up this whole time.
Sometimes technology does not cooperate. That's why I had to reboot before we get started today. And with us today is our frequent co-host, Walt Rebilliard. How you doing, Walt?
Sir, I am minus the sun because apparently you stole it all.
Yeah, it's more to just lay out my office differently. But be that as it may, Walt had a great idea for a podcast, so I'm going to turn the hosting duties over to him right now.
No pressure. So with the advent of Netflix's Death, Love, and Robots, or Love, Death, and Robots, or Robots and all the above, it seemed like a really great time to talk up short stories and for the role-playing game side, one-shot games, how they kind of spark the imagination quickly and get to the point a lot. Sorry, dog. they tend to pounce on the point a lot quicker than say, you know, a full-length novel or what have you. What do you guys look for when you're looking into like a short story? What does it for you? What doesn't?
I'll jump in real fast because I suspect Josh has a longer answer since he's got more of a writing career than I do. I worked for a lot of years as a journalist, and I was kind of trained that there's no subject you can't cover in 3,000 to 5,000 words. And if you're writing for longer than that, you're lazy. Now, that's not really true in the world of fiction, but I always thought Ender's Game was a great short story and kind of just a meh novel. So that's my two cents. What do you think, Josh?
You know, I never read Ender's Game as the short story version, so I can't make a definitive comparison between the two. But I mean, you look at kind of like what they did with the Hobbit movies and the Lord of the Ring movies, where they made a trilogy out of a novel, and that novel wasn't even the length of the originals, and they just kind of seemed to stretch and stretch and stretch the material to kind of a point where you're just like, ugh, can this be done already? but I haven't always been a fan of short stories, but I have read several that are really, really interesting to me. And the reason they are is the thing that I like about the medium is that with a novel, you read a story in a novel and you expect and it sometimes require closure at the end of the story. And in a short story, you don't necessarily need that or want it or get it. In a short story, you can have, like you say, a 3,000 word story with absolutely no closure at the end, and it leaves you thinking, you know, kind of like, what the hell just happened? But for their nature, that's kind of what a lot of them are set up to do. And I like that, because then reading that short story and that at the end of, well, what the hell, maybe that will lead into like a bigger idea or a longer exploration of that idea in a longer format, like a novel or a novella.
You think that one genre or another lends itself well to short stories? I know my wife is a huge fan of horror, Stephen King and stuff like that. And he's been in, you know, bucket loads of anthologies. I know horror works as a short story. Do you think there's a one that works over another?
No, I mean, definitely horror and science fiction are the two genres that kind of hit my palate, as it were, for short stories. I'm sure there is a market for other genres, but when you think of the nature of short, like science fiction, it's exploring something different. And so that allows, in a short story format, you can explore that and then leave it open to interpretation, which a lot of people like. In horror, it's the same thing. Not so much in fantasy. I mean, you can do it, but you need to be really well crafted in how you're doing it. And, you know, when you look at romance, I don't know that there's a really good way to do a romance short story. Isn't that a one-night stand? Right. Exactly. Your yeah.
House. I never thought this would happen to me.
Right. Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Now you just had
the active romance, John.
Yeah. Oh my God. We were talking with Scott Moon last week, and he was talking about doing, you know, the far future mecha romance, which, you know,
he's also a fan of the active romance werewolf adventures.
I couldn't tell if he was serious or not. I just went with it. Now you guys just had Kingdoms of Iron and Stone, which was your fantasy anthology. Was there a lot of, like you were saying that, you know, fantasy might be a more difficult genre to do that. And what was the response like when you put out the call for that, and what kind of stories did you get? Did it meet your idea of fantasy?
Honestly, I don't know why I still cannot answer to this day why I decided to do epic fantasy first. Because for the most part, our audience and our listeners are science fiction and military science fiction readers and writers. And so it was just like walking around one day and a tree branch falls out of nowhere and crushes a butterfly, and you're like, ah, epic fantasy, complete, makes total sense. We did get a lot of interest from writers. We got several, I don't even remember how many submissions we got. There was a lot. The team read them and kind of we scored them in a matrix and then picked the ones that ranked highest through that matrix. And a couple of them were invitees and they provided some really good stories, but it kind of spanned the gambit. I mean, you have one that, like, Rip Partlow wrote one that was kind of an abbreviated version of like a hero's journey type story. There was a couple that were some really neat twists on, you know, the tropes that you would read and you're like, oh, that makes sense. But then you get to the end and you're like, oh, okay, that was cool. And it's been received well. It's sold some copies here and there, and people seem to like it. But like I said, I think as a genre, the fantasy market does not lend itself well to a short story anthology. If Brandon Sanderson and George Martin and Peter V. Brett all wrote short stories and put an anthology, I mean, the thing would be a New York Times bestseller just because of who they are. The genre itself is more, I mean, the name epic fantasy kind of lends to longer material. So,
and most of the characters would probably be dead.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely true.
You know, I got to think that there's a submerged market for like a mashup of military themes with epic fantasy, because they're two huge subgenres, you know, in beneath science fiction and fantasy. I think like maybe Black Company, Glenn Cook's series sort of taps into that.
You know, I've seen those books. Matter of fact, I went to Barnes & Noble, which I rarely do, but I went to Barnes & Noble a couple of weeks ago and bought some books, and I saw those books, and I've always heard people talking about it, and I'm just... I was right there, like, I should buy it, and then I didn't. And but I should, because I've heard people talk about them a lot, and that I've had at least two people talk to me about kind of a military fantasy where it's not like a Game of Thrones type fantasy. It would be like a Galaxy's Edge fantasy, right, where you're following a group of rangers or something like that, where, you know, they still use bows and arrows and swords and stuff, but they go and do these military missions. And I, for one, have not seen fantasy done like that. Like Mark Idleheit writes epic fantasy, which has Roman legions and dwarves and elves and stuff like that. But that is very military driven through the Roman legion military. But haven't seen one that's like a mil sci. Well, I think mil sci-fi. I think, you know, squads of Marines and spaceships and stuff like that. So I think if you did like a squad of Rangers, I think that would be a really interesting topic to hit.
Have you seen any of the stuff that the boys Nick and Jason are doing as far as their fantasy military thing?
I haven't seen. I've seen some of the artwork. I haven't seen any of the actual material. I know that they're making a some kind of a game out of the world.
Yeah, we've seen it. We had them on at one point, and
cool.
they were geeking out hard. I mean,
I'm sure they were. They don't ever do that, but I'm sure they were.
And Nick was driving the bus like it had monster truck tires and flame shooting out the back. It was like rock and roll with RPG dice. It was crazy.
Normally when Jason and Nick do interviews, Jason is driving a four-wheeler and it's like Nick is driving the four-wheeler and Jason is like he's water skiing, but it's on mud and he doesn't have any shoes and the mud's like just hitting him in the face and he's just getting dragged along behind Nick.
It was a marketing convoy, that's for sure. I believe their game is called Forgotten Ruin.
Forgotten Ruin, yes. Right.
Yep.
Anybody who wants to check it out, ForgottenRuin.com is the place to go for that.
Yep. And I believe they're writing a set of novels on it, I think.
Yes. Lately, some of Nick's Twitter and his Facebook stuff has been pointed on him teasing something Tolkien-esque.
Yeah, I have seen that.
Interesting. Yes. But what did you guys think of the short stories in Netflix's series, Love, Death, and Robots, as far as like the variety, how it kind of kept the tone together? What can you guys talk about?
I really love short stories. I love anthology series for the same reasons that I don't always want to get super deep on a world. I don't always want to know, you know, a George R. R. Martin or J.R. Tolkien level of backstory. Sometimes just having that little story, that little snippet is just perfect. Like Suits, it was the until they pull back and show you they're on a planet, it's just these farmers fighting off alien invaders in these, let's call them Mecha, for lack of a better word. And it's more about tone, although the fight scenes were pretty cool too. And just a little taste of that with the relationships, and I don't think there's a character that has more than 30 lines in the whole thing, but it's just enough to get you a taste, and it's kind of a light touch, and it's done. You know, you don't get to find out everybody's backstory and whose father, you know, was actually this other guy's father too. That was probably my favorite of the whole thing. I thought Ice Age was fun too, but it almost seemed a little bit gimmicky. So what do you think, Josh?
I was actually going to say Suits was really good for me. I had a long conversation with a buddy of mine here in town, and we're about equal levels of geekdom. And we were talking about this, and what's interesting is I watched the anthology over the course of like 2 or 3 days. I watched all of them and just I had no idea who wrote them, which I went back and looked after the fact, and most of the stories, when I saw who wrote them, I was like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. What I didn't know is that Sunny's Edge was written by Peter F. Hamilton, which that is Peter F. Hamilton. We've had him on our show twice. Really, really great guy, and I love him. Every time he puts a book out, I buy it in hardback and an audio because I have to have his books. And then when I look at that story, Sunny's Edge, and think about Peter's writing, it makes sense that he wrote that story. It was a really, really well done story, just for the twist at the end. And a lot of these stories had some really cool twists, what's the one where they got, they went to the gate and they got stuck. What was that one?
You talking about the one in Russia?
No, there was one.
Oh, wait. Oh,
Beyond the Aquila Riff. Alistair Reynolds wrote that, which made sense. And me and my buddy actually talked about this, and, I mean, I guess we could spoil it. It's been out for a month or two. But I watched it, and you get to the end, and it's kind of obviously this guy's been on a loop for whoever knows how long, and you get to the end of this loop and this evil looking kind of spider character comes out, and obviously it's an alien. There's something wrong with the jump gate, obviously, and they've been sending people here. And my initial thought was, oh, they're in hell. Like, they're putting these people through hell. But my buddy was like, well, what if this alien doesn't think he's hell? He's trying to help these people. These people are stuck. They don't know how to get out. He doesn't know what to do with them. And so he's trying to give them what they want. He's trying to give them some type of peace by giving them what they want. He's just not doing it in the correct way. And so that was really cool, a different way to interpret that story. That's another thing I like about short stories, is that sometimes you can interpret them completely different than somebody else. And you look at the source material and you're like, I think this, and you think this, and there's no way that either of you could be wrong. I really like that.
Did you see a lot in the anthologies that you guys have done so far?
Of like interpreting it different? No, not that I've seen. I mean, there are some that you kind of vote for, you kind of root for whoever you choose in the story. Like you can pick the antagonist or the protagonist, and very well you could root for either side, but nothing where it's kind of like left up to interpretation in that aspect of things. I will tell you, my favorite one of the series was Lucky 13.
Yes. Oh my God.
What's crazy is, like I said, I watched these and I had no idea who the authors were. And I follow Marco Kluse and Peter F. Hamilton pretty close on social media. And I don't know if it was part of their contract or whatever, but I saw nothing from them about being in the anthology. And so when I got to Lucky 13, I've read Lucky 13, the short story. And so when I got to it and it started going, I was like, oh, the name sounds familiar. And then I started like watching the first 5 minutes. I was like, I've seen this. Like either I've seen it or I've read it somewhere before. And then I start processing, where have I seen this before? And then I realized it was Marco Kluse. And they got to the end, Marco Kluse wrote it. I thought that was really legit, but the animation on that and the story, the whole closed loop at the end was just phenomenal, I thought.
Yeah, that was really well done. Although I swear I've seen, I mean, there's kind of like similar stories out there, you know, fiction or, you know, folklore about, you know, those kind of experiences with, you know, boats or planes in wartime.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I can't think of one that I know that there's been like PT-109 was one that come to mind. It was the Jack yeah. Kennedy boat. And then
I was thinking of the Haunted Tank in DC Comics, which is maybe more of an extreme example of that theme. But
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
So, well, it's I want to say Silver Age Comics. It's a tank possessed by the spirit of a Confederate war general.
Oh, nice.
It's Silver Age weirdness. I think it's Silver Age. But you know, same basic idea. There's a personality in the vehicle that helps the guys out. But
oh yeah, that's pretty legit.
Yeah. I think we should probably mention, with the advent of the Kindle and the ebook marketplace on Amazon, I mean, I know for, you know, back in the early 2000s, a little bit before, people were saying, well, short stories are dead, all the genre magazines are dying, there's just no way to get in. But it seems like now there's really a much larger marketplace for short fiction than maybe there has been in decades.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But for slightly different reasons. Like I said, I haven't been my whole reading career, if you want to call it that, my whole life in reading has been reading long fiction novels and really long like trilogies and what, like David Weber, I've read him since I was in my early 20s. And I never really got into reading short fiction. The only reason I started writing it was because I got invited to write for an anthology from Nathan Heisted, who's putting together a anthology back in 2016. And the reason that we started doing them as Keystroke as a company is because everybody says don't do things for exposure, right? But the opportunity for short stories is not just to gain readers, but in today's market, it's absolutely 100% to gain potential opportunities in writing. I in 2016 was the first 2016 I got published in that anthology, and now 2019 I'm a full-time author because of what happened over the course of the last 3 years from being in that anthology and being like that anthology Richard Fox was in, I was in Ralph Kern, all those guys were in that anthology. Now Ralph Kern and is part of Keystroke. We're in a collective with Nathan and Devin C. Ford and Scott Bartlett, Scott Moon. But because of all these anthologies, but because of the collections and kind of networking that we've done because of the anthologies, I got to write some books with Richard Fox. I'm going to write some books with Jeff Chaney this summer. I've got another collaboration that is it's set, it's ready. Like, we're going to do it. I just can't announce it yet because we haven't signed the contract. But that is one of the reasons that we wanted to do these anthologies is yeah, we want to get authors out and get new fans and pull readers in. But the opportunity that I see for people to go, you know, bigger, you know, you read a short story and you're like, oh, I really like that short story. I want to talk to that author. Maybe we can work together. Maybe we can write a novel together. Scott and I, my partner, Scott Moon, who's on your show, we've done several short stories where we collaborate on the short stories. And so we've done two for Chris Kennedy, two short stories that were actually intertwined and just from different perspectives. And then one where mine was first and his was second, and they both told individual stories, but then they were a complete story arc between the two. And then Casey and Ezel and I are writing a short story, two short stories together for one of Chris Kennedy's anthologies. So I think that the opportunity, I say opportunity cost, but the opportunity is there to do more than just write a short story for someone to read. It just opens up so many other avenues of things to do. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer.
We like those. They help us burn through our coffee. what do you think of using short stories as a vehicle for like a longer property or something to expand? So, for example, one of the in science fiction, one of the biggest short stories that has, you know, seen reboots even is "We'll Remember It for You Wholesale." And you know, they burn that into a 2-hour movie and managed to flesh it out both times. The first time with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Total Recall, and then the next time with Colin Farrell as Total Recall. What do you think of using a short story like that? As because I know, like for us, we deal a lot with the role playing game community, and you know, as people get older, they don't get to game as much. So they do a lot of like one shots or short story games. And sometimes those get popular and the players at the table say, I need more of this. What do you think? How do you think that works?
So it's interesting that you say that, because I think that especially in today's market where you have like Netflix and Amazon and people that are looking to expand properties like that and do series, you do a short story like Lucky 13, you could easily turn those characters or that story into a series, and people love that type of animation. And I think that you could potentially do that with anthologies as well, and just gauge reader interest on, how they like those stories. And instead of like, some people will write like novels. Hi, Katie. somebody will write novels. Like one of the things is you write like the first novel in a series and see if it hits off. And then you do another novel and another first novel in that series and see if it takes off. And then as you do that, you kind of grow and look at the interest in those different properties. You see which one takes off. In the short story, you can do the same thing.
Yeah, I just anecdotal. I used to work with a guy who had he was working on book 9 of a 10 book set, and he hadn't submitted or self-published anything yet. He was like, "Nah, man, I want to get all 10 novels done because I'm not going to be George R. R. Martin. I'm going to have all 10 novels good to go." We've been working on it for like 20 years, and I'm like, "Well, that's great, but what if the first novel comes out and no one likes it?"
Right. That is kind of the. That's the worry, right? Like that's one of the things I like about doing collaborations to kind of get off the ground on what you're doing is you sign up and you write with authors that are already established. And then those readers will read your stories and say, oh, I like these collaborative stories. And you can kind of gauge, reader interest in different things as you're writing and create new stories. But I definitely think that, like you're saying, you spend 20 years, you've really kind of missed the bucket of opportunity there.
Did you guys have a favorite one of Love, Death, and Robots? And did any of those spark your imagination of to say, oh, I could so write something like this?
So I really, really liked Lucky 13. I think, and like you said, the Ice Age one was interesting. but it was more like a Sunday morning cartoon that I don't know.
There were a couple that were kind of, I don't want to say long jokes, but alternate histories.
Three robots.
I love Three Robots. It was great dialogue, but it's a comedy. Yeah. I love comedy bits, but when the yogurt took over.
So when I went back and saw that Scalzi wrote those, I was like, oh, of course John Scalzi wrote those, because they were
Old Man's War. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would love to see a longer version of Sunny's Edge. I think that would turn into a really cool concept.
That was one of my favorites. I loved that. Just because, I mean, you know, I got a thing from X, but like, you know, that itches the same scratch, or scratches the same itch that, you know, you have different types of monsters that fight, and it's kind of fun to see the different types interact, and it's almost UFC in a way, and how that works.
Yeah, I like I said, I think Suits was probably my favorite. I enjoyed The Secret War, the one set in what looks like Siberia. I got to tell you, one that kind of disturbed me was The Witness. It's sort of a basic kind of a chase scene loop.
Yeah.
At no point do they stop and explain to you, hey, these people are clones or androids or duplicates or whatever. You just kind of left to sort of figure it out for yourself.
You know, that one was... it's interesting because they made that one look like it was animated, but it actually wasn't. It was just people, and the way that they filmed it, they made it look animated, which I thought was interesting on one point, but then I was like, okay, it's stylistic, it's cool. I liked the loop at the end. Like, I thought that was funny. Like, okay, it's just one of those things. But that's just, you know, it's like I said before, it's just one of those things that you can do with a short story that you cannot do with a long form novel, is you don't give any closure at the end. And you just, it's basically for shock value. Like, oh man, that was cool. And then you don't care because you've only, like, how long is 12 minutes, which is actually really long for a chase scene like that. It was a long 12 minutes. But I mean, if you were to do that, like, let's just say Avengers Endgame is 3 hours and like whatever minutes. If they do that at the end of Avengers Endgame, and then it's just they scroll back and it's some dude with a snow globe shaking it around and set it down, like, you know, people will be like ridiculously pissed off. But for a short story, you can do that stuff.
Yeah, if you're gonna have the big fight between the Avengers and Thanos, and all of a sudden it just fades to black, and there's that guy at the counter in the members only jacket, and you're like, what?
they get up to meet, and then they cut to like a pre-recorded Stan Lee, and he's like, well, thanks for watching. And then the movie's
over. The real treasures of friends we made along the way, kids.
Yeah, Excelsior, and then roll credits.
Yeah. Is there gonna be a second season of this show? Do we know?
God, I hope so, man. I really hope so. And I want them to, if they watch this, I want them to reach out to me because I want to do one. But I think it was really neat. Like, it was kind of over the top with some of the nudity. I'm not a prude or anything, but it seems like they kind of just did that for like ridiculous shock value. And like, I get it's all artistic expression and blah, blah, blah. But some of those ones you really didn't, it didn't lend anything to the story, and it was just like, okay, whatever. And after like the first three dicks swiping around, like, eventually you're just like, come on, like, how many do we have to look at? But I do hope they do another one. I think it was really cool. It's kind of like Black Mirror. I hope they do a couple more series of Black Mirror. Or is it Black Mirror or Broken
Mirror? Yeah, Black Mirror. Yeah, it's tight. Yeah. The Christmas episode. Oh dear God.
Yeah.
It's always bleak. Talk Soup, that new talk show they have on Netflix, which is like an old talk show that used to be on E. They got what's his name? Jeff from Community. I forget the actor's name. But he's always like, hey, we got a new episode of Black Mirror for you guys, and it'll be like 90 seconds of our cell phones are turning us into assholes. But no, I like it, but they can maybe hit the same button sometimes too much. Just like with nudity in Love, Death, and Robots. But I think some of that is, sometimes I think Netflix wants to push a series, and I think Like Orange is the New Black. I read the book. I like the first season of the show. You turn it on, you want to check it out. In the first 45 seconds, there's some boobs right there. And I'm thinking, okay, they want to make sure people watch. So, right. You know, I'm not going to get bored in the first minute and go somewhere else. So,
yeah. It's kind of like clickbait a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
Yeah. When they did their marketing campaign, instead of Netflix original, it was marketed as not safe for work original.
Right. Exactly. Well, and that I remember seeing the commercial when they put the first commercial out for Lev Death and Robots, and it was so like gritty and like it almost gave me a seizure watching it because it was just like a whole bunch of flashing images with kind of screechy music and flashes between the different stories. And you're like, I have no idea what this is about, but I'm kind of interested, so I want to see it because some of the art looks really cool. But I mean, I am glad that I watched it.
Do you think they would keep the name for a follow-on series? Would they stay Love, Death, and Robots?
I mean, I don't see why they would change it. I mean, it covers the spectrum, right? It's a sci-fi thing. Like the love part, I don't know that there was necessarily any love stories. I don't think there was a lot of death. there was at least three robots. So I think I don't see any reason to change it. They it's kind of like Black Mirror. What does Black Mirror have to do with anything?
Nah, it's just like Twilight Zone.
Right.
I think in the Good Hunting one, where the fox spirit from China.
And then it goes
all steampunk. I think the fox spirit ended up not so much a romantic love, but loved the guy who was taking care of her much like a sibling.
Right.
And that was amazing at the end, the way that they twisted that around. So I really enjoyed that. I never saw them going steampunk or like, you know, like diesel robotics on that one. That was a fun twist.
Right. Can you think of any TV episode, movie that's ever handled steampunk better than that? I mean, cause that was actually kind of an entertaining, you know, look into a steampunk world. And usually steampunk is either really bad movies like Wild Wild West, or
I don't even label Wild Wild West as steampunk because that was just a byproduct of what he. There was no reason to have because nobody else was using it. It was just that guy, and I honestly can't think of a movie.
I think that in America we haven't really grafted onto
it. Hasn't hit yet. Yeah.
You have those like isolated pockets of communities and stuff like that. There's a big comic book community that focuses on it, but as far as like the Japanese love it. There's an old anime from that's based on a Japanese comic. It's called The Golden Eye Beast and His Helmet. It's very steampunk to the point of like steampunk cyborgs with elephant heads, magic. The American title that they used was Karastengu Kabuto, so the helmet of the raven god, in English, and it was just amazing. But also anything by Miyazaki, Spirited Away. You also have another 1980s property. It's Castle Falkenstein. What's that?
That's a game though, right?
Yep, and it was based off of a Japanese comic. So they really love their steampunk a lot.
Yeah.
Cool. It's just one of those genres that it just living in America, you know, you like I say, there's a lot of novels, not many movies or TV shows that really do it well. And there's a shitload of cosplay for some reason.
There is a lot of steampunk cosplay, which I don't know that I've ever read a steampunk novel. I've seen them out there all the time, but I don't know that I've ever read one. I'm trying to think if I've ever.
No, I have read one I thought was really good. It was called Bone Shaker by Sherry Priest. And it was from the early, mid-2000s.
I have seen that, but I've seen that several times. And just like The Black Company, I've been like right there trying to grab it, and then for whatever reason, don't.
Well, it has zombies and airships and giant tunneling machines.
Nice. Nice.
If I can sell you on it, you know, I'm sure someone snapped up the movie rights because it was really big when it came out, but I haven't heard about anything since then.
You know what? The Mortal Engines was steampunk.
Yeah,
That's true.
I haven't read the books. I just actually watched the movie, which is weird that I didn't think about it before. But
what did you think of that movie?
You know, I liked it. Plot wise, there were certain things that I thought were kind of silly, like the idea of a gigantic city riding around on wheels, gobbling up other cities. But I mean, you get past that, and the story is pretty interesting. I thought the characters were pretty interesting. I think I go back and I look at the first book was about, and a lot of the things don't match up with the first novel, but obviously they weren't sure that it was going to take off to do the three. But for what it was, I thought it was really enjoyable. There was a lot of people I thought that didn't like it because of the big rolling cities, but you get past that and you kind of just like, okay, I'll go with it. And I thought the rest of it was pretty fun. I like the flying city. It reminded I love that kind of you look at it and you're like, oh, they've got jets on their thing, but that's a hot air balloon. And like, it was just, I like that like smash of technology. It's kind of cool.
That's the thing about steampunk that really gets everybody is how they use the different things. Or like, I was reading a short story the other day where they were the steampunk technology was, they had like a handheld thing that would push steam up into your field of vision, and then a hologram would play through the steam.
Oh, nice.
And then we actually had a game, an actual play that we did last week, where it was like 1930s America, but if America had stayed with that theme until now, and they had steam driven like holograms and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So I mean, nice. But on the comic side, you see it all over the place. I mean, they even have steampunk Sarah Palin. So I mean, I cannot, nice. I cannot make this up. I mean, it's just that easy, you know. I mean,
oh, nice, steampunk Sarah Palin, nice. I like that.
You can't make this up, but I mean,
you know, all the work it takes to make a comic book, why,
right?
2 pages of writing, lettering, art, inking. Why would you do it for a controversy? Oh, what would you even call it, a controversy? I mean, hey, let's take steampunk, it's popular, and match it up with a politician who was controversial 15 years ago.
Hey, so Josh, are any of your properties looking at for the short stories? Is there anything that stands out that would work well as a comic?
Any of my stories, you mean, or just the
The short story anthologies, and anything that has crossed your desk that you were like, this needs pen, ink, and attitude right now?
I've got several in the near future anthology that I thought were pretty legit. Of course, you're putting me on the spot, and I haven't looked at those stories in like a month and a half. They've been in Ellen Campbell's desk editing them.
I'm sure there's no swearing going on at all.
Oh, there is plenty of Ellen stabbing and cutting, and that is what she does. I don't know. I don't know that I could pick out a single one and say, yes, let's make a property out of that. I know that as a company, we're putting together it's not an anthology, but it's a shared world. And it's called Nova Blue. And we've it's going to be fun. We've got 4 authors right now. We're going to be recruiting some other ones. We had a lot of interest in it, and basically it's a shared universe, but all the stories are basically pro law enforcement or law enforcement related stories, where either it's a cop is the main character or a bounty hunter or something like that. And it all has to deal with, you know, justice and the criminal system and all that stuff. But some of the Rick Partlow is writing a novel, and it's coming along very well. I've got the first 4,000 words to read, and James S. Aaron is writing a novella. Casey Azell is writing a short story. CCAKK is writing a short story. So I think those series and the system that we have set up, it's not really a magic system because it's sci-fi, but the system, the world, everything that happens in that, I think that would be a really cool Netflix thing, because we've got we wanted to do revolvers in space, but we wanted to come up with a legitimate reason why people would have revolvers in space. And so we came up with this this crystal technology that you put energy through, and depending on the color of crystal is how powerful that blaster beam will be. And every time you put a blast of energy through it, it weakens it for a short period of time. And over time, it will completely degrade, but it rotates, the barrel rotates so that each shot goes through a different crystal and gives the crystal time to kind of heal after every beam goes through. So nice. You've got these guns that are out there that you've got like a rifle that's got like a 12 crystal barrel in it, and it just spins like this. And you can, if you want, go like full auto and just start blasting people, but your crystals are going to break and then your gun's not going to fire if you like, you just put a whole bunch of shots through it. So that mechanic and seeing that brought to life on the page, I think is going to be really cool.
That's fantastic. Will you be using words like hoss and partner?
I think that there is actually Rick Partlow is doing something, I think, that's on a space station, but it's also on a frontier planet. I think James S. Aaron might be doing a frontier planet too, but we wanted to come up with a couple settings that were kind of similar. So like we have a big space station that are basically a whole bunch of space stations put together, but then a frontier planet where it could be like a Wild West scenario, and then potentially we could have Hoss and all those words used.
Nice. Anything? Excuse me. My dog just. anything that you would like people to know as far as the anthologies that you guys are publishing or some of the stories that you've got coming up? I know Nova Blue, I'm like salivating.
Well, we have all the Nova Blue stories are in progress. I don't have any publication information on those. I'm hoping to do it later this year. We'll just see how those stories come in, and then depending on post-production and all that stuff. Our newest anthology, we had scheduled to release this month. It's probably going to be, we'll be pushing it to get to the end of this month. We had some real life issues that kind of set us back a little bit. So we're probably looking at May for that, is our near future anthology. Matthew Mather is doing the foreword. He's got some of the stories right now that he's reading. Here probably in 2 weeks, I'll release the information for our space opera anthology that we're going to put together for the summer. That'll be, we're aiming for like an August, September release probably with that. So, and then after that, we're going to do a Mill Sci-Fi one. And we've got some really cool people lined up for that. And Peter F. Hamilton's going to do our foreword for the space opera anthology, which I thought was pretty cool of him to do. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question about marketing?
Yeah.
When you're trying to market short stories, or specifically you put together a bunch of short stories into an anthology, is the key to marketing, you know, getting a good mix of well-known authors with followings, along with some guys who are just starting out, and you're kind of rely on their fan base and social media to sort of get the word out, or do you do any kind of advertising as well?
So we do a little bit of advertising. I mean, we've got AMS ads rolling for it. A lot of it was word of mouth right at the beginning. But yeah, you definitely want to have kind of a good mix there. We typically do 3 to 4 invites. Sometime like our space opera one, we've got more than that. The space opera anthology is probably going to be pretty big. But we typically want to do 3 to 4 to 5 invites for what you would call the big name or the established authors that have fan bases. And then we do submission slots for all the rest. And so we'll take those stories and we'll read them. And like you said, we have a matrix that we use and, you know, whether we like the stories, where we think they're good, that type of thing. And then we'll, when I put them together, usually the editor and I will look at the stories and slot them in where we think will push readers through the book. And so it is kind of a mixture of both.
You know, I never thought about anthology composition, but it sounds like you think about, you know, what's going to keep them turning their pages after this story into the next story. You know, how do we get the kind of tone that we want? That's an aspect of it I hadn't really thought about before.
Yeah, I mean, you want to definitely start the anthology off with a bang. You want to start it off with a couple really, really good, really, really solid stories. And every anthology, and that's the thing, a lot of it's subjective, right? So some of the stories that I like that are in the anthology, maybe some people don't like. Does it mean that they're a bad story? No, it's just that they don't like them. But what we try to do is what we think are some of the best ones, we'll try to put those in front, and then we'll cap them at the end with what we think is maybe either a well-established author or another one of the really good stories. Like, for instance, if we have Richard Fox in one, we'd either put Richard Fox in the front or we put him at the back. Because you start them off at the front and you're like, oh, this is really good, we're going to read through. But we put them at the end, so people generally will read through to get to the Richard Fox if they don't click all the way through. And that's fine, too. But it's all, you know, strategic in the way that you set up that those stories, for sure.
And do you have a cover for the anthology coming up?
I do. Let me see.
Ooh, we get an exclusive. This is.
Let's see.
We love exclusives. They taste just like chicken.
Just like chicken. A little burn on the outside. Really, really juicy and tender on the inside. Let's see. Anthologies. Give me a second here. Okay. Let's see. Where is it?
Luckily, your beard is majestic, so that makes for good TV.
It is. It is. This is, let's see, let's go over here. This is I've got to tweak some things in it. We had to have an author dropped out of the collection, so I've got to change his name. But here it is there. I think you guys can see it. Should be.
Yeah. That's the Horizons one.
Yeah.
We're just, hey, who's that guy in the middle?
Look at that. Walt Robillard is on there. That's interesting.
How'd that happen?
Oh, very nice.
Tons of bribery.
This one's coming out hopefully in May. And then we should have our space opera one. I'll have the cover here. Oh, probably another month or two. We'll start working on that and put that together. I think this is a really fun cover. I went through a whole bunch of artwork and Steve Bollier did the design. I thought it was really, really neat. Not over the top, and it's very simple, and you look at it and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. So yeah.
I need a floating orb like drone.
Yes. Yeah. Everyone needs one of those.
Yes, because all I have of right now are the cats, and you know, they don't float, and they all they do is drone. So I mean,
that's right. Yeah, I've got those anthologies coming out, and then I've got Strikers War coming out. I hear that it's coming out the end of May? Question mark. And then I have Edge of Valor. That's. Yes!
Edge of Valor. Sorry, got excited.
Yeah, that the official date for that is going to be July 2nd, is what I hear. So they've got to do the audio version for that. Those are the things that I got going on. Yeah,
that was a fantastic. I liked being, I loved the amount of bribery I had to endure to get that book, because at the end of it. It was well worth, 14 pounds of coffee, two cats, and taking your kids out for ice cream for 3 days. I mean, that was.
I had to amend the last chapter, so I have to send you the last chapter. But I'll tell you, your advice and thoughts on the book were invaluable.
Oh, thank you.
Going forward. Editing it and then going forward into the second book. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Oh, the story was fantastic. I mean, as far as like a military thriller goes, that just happened to be in space. You know, yeah. I was hooked. So I'm very stoked to see this come out.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, Josh, before we wrap up, people who want to see more about Keystroke Medium and what you guys do, your Keystroke Medium at podbean.com. Or if they go to just your URL, keystrokemedium.com, they have links to all your stuff. And if they search for Keystroke Medium on YouTube, you guys have your channel page there, right?
Yep, we're actually the only Keystroke Medium anywhere. So if you Google Keystroke Medium, you'll get all of our channels. YouTube is just youtube.com/keystrokemedium. You can go to keystrokemedium.com every Monday night. So tonight, well, it's tonight while we're recording this, but every Monday night at 8 p.m. Central, that's 9 Eastern, we do our live broadcasts. Tonight we have Jamie Davis on the show. And then on Thursdays, we do another live broadcast at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, which is The Writer's Journey, which is Kayleen Williams and Lauren Moore. They focus more on kind of a craft and what writers need to do to kind of kick off their career. And if you're just starting, the Monday show is more of like this show, a conversation interview type.
And if you like cool accents, there's always Saturday too.
Yeah, that's right. Saturday we have Keystroke International. It's not live, but it comes out on Saturdays, and that's Ralph Kern and John Evans and Devin C. Ford.
That's a writer's name, Devin C. Ford. That's that sounds like writer.
You're that or a sniper. Yeah.
Fair enough. And we'll throw up links to Striker's War and to the anthology coming out in May as well. Awesome. I've got to wrap things up and go back to prostituting myself for my corporate paylords.
Indeed.
Any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
No, thanks for having me on. It was a blast. I appreciate it.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Walt, do you have any closing thoughts?
Love, death, and robots. Sorry. Those are three thoughts. I got nothing.
No worries. All right. Well, hey, to all our listeners and viewers, thanks for checking out the Banff Podcast, and we'll catch you next time.